Welcome to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. I'm Gary Carnevale. Thank you for listening tonight. Tonight we'll have a conversation with author Talcott Broadhead, who is the author of Neat Polka Dot, a book for children that focuses on a gender non-binary character. Also, I'll play some music by Bay Area vocalist and composer Derek Lassiter. Derek was kind enough to send Outbeat Radio his new release, Music Outside, and we're certain you'll enjoy his music as much as we do. We'll get directly to our conversation right after Greg Moralia and Outbeat Radio news and calendar.
I have found Outbeat Radio news, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Good evening, this is Greg Moralia with your Outbeat Radio news for this Sunday, September 18th, 2016. PLUS Magazine reports that 1 million Russians are living with HIV. That's nearly 1% of the country's entire population, and the rates just keep on climbing. This compares with 1.2 million Americans who have HIV, accounting for 0.037 of the entire U.S. population. The ultra-conservative country has not responded well to this information, and rather than immediately forge a plan to help its HIV-positive citizens, the opposite is true. Hundreds of thousands of HIV-positive patients have been left with minimal resources. Moscow journalist Kim Trail reports that the infection rates in Russia are growing at 10% a year. Hospitals are currently overcrowded, and there's not enough money for medicine. Much of the reason is the stigma around HIV. Even Russia's government seems to believe that only those who use injection drugs or who are gay, in the sex trade, or have lots and lots of sex, are susceptible to getting HIV. Dr. Pokrovsky, a Russian HIV doctor, said, "Personally, I'm skeptical about the benefit of putting money into churches ahead of drugs and education, but many people believe it helps." He added that Russia's HIV epidemic is no longer limited to gays and injection drug users. He said, "Last year, heterosexual women made up almost half of the country's record number of almost 100,000 new cases." He added, "HIV has entered into the mainstream population. As the government continues to fail the Russian people, the virus will continue to spread." And here in the U.S., last week, a New Jersey appeals court threw out the 15-count conviction of a former Rutgers University student whose roommate, Tyler Clemente, killed himself after being captured on webcam kissing another man. The three-judge panel dismissed four bias intimidation counts against Daron Ravi because of a change in state law since Ravi's 2012 trial. The judges ordered a new trial on other counts, including invasion of privacy, tampering with evidence, and hindering apprehension because of the evidence prosecutors used to prove the bias charges. Ravi faced up to 10 years in prison but was sentenced to only 30 days in the county jail, plus 3 years probation and community service. He ended up serving only 20 days. Prosecutors had argued before the appeals court that the sentencing judge overstepped his authority by imposing a sentence that was too lenient. Friday's ruling rendered this argument moot. During Ravi's three-week trial, jurors heard that in September of 2010, Ravi used a friend's computer to view a few seconds of live streaming video from his own dorm room webcam and saw his roommate, Clemente, and another man kissing. He told others about it in person, in texts, instant messaging, and tweets, and alerted others again 2 days later that Tyler Clemente, 18, wanted the room to himself. A night later, Clemente jumped off the George Washington Bridge. And in Texas, groups are still pushing conversion or ex-gay therapy, which attempts to turn LGBT people straight or cisgender, and are pouring money into promoting this dangerous practice. The Houston Chronicle reports the latest billboard appeared this week in Waco, Texas, saying, quote, "Ex-gays prove change is possible," end quote. The billboard featured a beaming man's face appearing next to the words. Numerous mental health groups have condemned conversion therapy, including the American Psychological Association, and warned it can contribute to depression, anxiety, drug abuse, homelessness, and suicidal ideation. California, Illinois, New Jersey, Oregon, and Vermont have all made it illegal for minors to be exposed to this fraudulent practice. The Waco billboard was not greeted warmly by everyone in the conservative Central Texas city, including Charlie Garrison, a minister of the LGBT-affirming Central Texas Metropolitan Community Church, who vowed to hold a pride event at the site of the sign. Now here's your calendar of events for the coming week. On Monday, September 19th at 2 p.m., the Positive Images Sonoma General LGBTQQI meeting will be held at the Sonoma Community Center, 276 East Street in Sonoma. And also on Monday at 7 p.m., the parents of trans youth will meet at the Positive Images Center, 312 Chin Street in Santa Rosa. And also on Monday at 5:30 p.m., the Marin AIDS Project will host its Mix It Up monthly mixer at the Four Point Sheraton, 1010 Northgate Drive in San Rafael. And on Tuesday, September 20th at 1:30 p.m., the Santa Rosa Senior Group will meet at the Unitarian Universalist Congregation at the Glacier Center in Santa Rosa. And finally, on Saturday, September 17th at 7 p.m., the Russian River Sisters will host Two-Face Bingo at the Veterans Hall in Guerneville. The cost is $20 for two bingo cards. You can purchase tickets and learn more at rrsisters.org. For more information about LGBT events happening here in the North Bay, go to gaysonoma.com. And for all the latest LGBT news headlines, go to our website at outbeatnews.com. Be sure to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for updates from Outbeat Radio News all week long. For Gary Carnevale, I'm Greg Moralia. Now back to Outbeat Collage with Gary Carnevale and Michaela Kennan.
Outbeat Radio News, your source for LGBT news from the North Bay and beyond.
Talcott Broadhead is a genderqueer parent, artist, therapist, activist, and professor who lives in Olympia, Washington. Meet Polka Dot is Talcott's first book. Welcome to the show, Talcott.
Thank you for having me.
Before we talk about your wonderful children's book, tell us a bit about your background, education, and professional life.
Well, I actually did my undergraduate work in Massachusetts at Bard College at Simon's Rock. And my focus at that time was both history and linguistics, actually, intercultural studies and linguistics. And I've always had a love affair with books and languages and expression. So that was a wonderful experience. And I found myself many years later returning to school for graduate studies in social work, which was done at the University of Washington School of Social Work in Seattle. I selected their program because it's social justice based. And for so many years, I had worked in social justice work, quite varied from, you know, literacy programs to helping establish a drop-in center for homeless youth in Olympia. And one of the themes throughout my experience was when working with folks who were marginalized and disenfranchised, there was always a high number of trans and queer gender awesome folks because of our experiences typically, unfortunately, with family and also social rejection. We tend to be disproportionately represented amongst some of those, disenfranchised groups. Poverty, homelessness are often experienced. And so my work kind of took an interesting journey through advocacy at many levels and eventually landing in a place where I was doing a lot of advocacy and social work for children who are trans and their parents or caregivers, their educators. And my graduate degree really helped me shore up some of the clinical and public policy skills necessary to be really effective in my community that way.
So talk about growing up and when you recognized that you were genderqueer.
You know, I was actually just having this conversation yesterday with a friend in the car. When I was younger, I was what people now or even then might call a tomboy. And not really language I embrace. I think that, you know, that itself is very binary and it's associating somebody who might not match all of the rules and norms of their assigned gender with like boyness and maleness. And I was certainly, you know, all over the place with my gender and of course didn't have the language for it then, right? We didn't talk about it that way. But at night, my mom would tuck me in every night. And there were times I remember when I was very little and I would be just, upset and frustrated. And I would say things like, I wish I were a boy. And my mom was so supportive and would say things like, you know, maybe you're not a boy, you're not a girl, you're a Talcott. And I love Talcott. And that was so affirming, right? And so coming in during a time in the late 70s and early 80s when there were no dialogues happening in a mainstream way, certainly about, you know, gender expansiveness or fluidity. And that was definitely, I think, helpful in terms of setting up my confidence throughout my life. And then the term genderqueer is also a relatively new term and one that I absolutely embrace. For me, my gender is not static, certainly, and has never fallen within any of the categories that we've been offered, so to speak. So that language is really helpful, the genderqueer language. And of course, people are always inventing new terms for themselves, which I also embrace. So when that term kind of fell upon my ears, probably, I don't know, what? How old is that? Maybe 8 years, 10 years?
Right, not really that
old. It's not very old. Immediately, I was just like, yes, that's rad. That's a good one. So I do like that term and it suits me quite a bit.
Right. For so long, everything was just lumped under trans.
Yeah. And, you know, trans is fine for me also, but we definitely, it evokes a very specific, again, kind of this monolithic narrative that as visibility increases, which is fantastic, we're still, you know, fed only maybe what society considers the most desirable image of transness. And that tends to be those trans people who pass, right? I'm doing air quotes. Of course, your listeners can't see me. I'm doing them a lot.
Which is difficult for radio. I do it all the time.
So, you know, there's a lot more diversity in when it comes to gender than most of us have, you know, been brought up to believe and understand. And so I do appreciate lots of different terms and identifiers so that people can be even more clear about what their experience is with gender.
So what inspired you to write Meet Polka Dot?
So certainly it's inspired and informed by my own experiences. Having worked for so long with parents of children who are trans or gender nonconforming, there's kind of always been this moment, whether it's amongst educators, other clinicians who I'm training or educating, students, parents, or even the children themselves, where they would ask me, are there any good books you can recommend, you know, about this? And, you know, this being a very vague but large kind of
subject matter,
subject and right. understood to mean about maybe being trans or gender nonconforming. There's very few books. There are and have been a few titles throughout the years, and all of which I embrace. I think all of the stories should be told. But there was never one book that explained or gave kind of maybe more in a primer way information about gender and what it is, but also what it isn't. So I ultimately just decided, okay, how about I write a book? And was encouraged to do so. So I was absolutely inspired by the need of people who were kind of navigating and still are public and private spaces, particularly with children who don't conform to, you know, these grown-up concepts that are so static about gender.
Why is that so deep? Why are these gender issues so deep? I mean, yeah. I see it in my perfectly sort of evolved heterosexual friends with the trucks and the dolls. And, and it just comes so easily. And I'm thinking, are you really thinking about that?
Yeah. Well, any social construct, any socially constructed category has been designed to, you know, essentially determine and distribute resources. And so in, you know, mainstream American, both North, Central, and South American cultures, influenced, of course, by colonial cultures, we've decided that gender looks these two ways, masculine and feminine. Masculine has to go with male and feminine with female. Those are the only options. And that those who are masculine male are afforded the most resources, right? And so it's all about distribution of resources, therefore power, privilege. And when we start to challenge that, we destabilize society, right? Because these are social constructs that have been developed to firm up the way that society ascribes privilege and also ascribes disadvantage. So the privilege doesn't happen in a vacuum, right? So the male privilege happens at the direct expense of women. And because we haven't, in that categorical way, even allowed for other options gender-wise, we've often only seen oppression when it comes to sex or gender as sexism against women, female people. What's important to understand is that gender is distinct from sex. And so for so long, we've been told biological sex is how our gender is ascribed. And if you have this part, you know, you're a male. And if you have these parts, you're female. And in reality, gender is actually an individual's sense of self in its deepest way. And that might match what you've been told your gender is. But again, it's a social construct. So these concepts like trucks are for, you know, people with these parts and dresses are for people with those parts. It's like so arbitrary. And it's definitely, you know, culture and time specific. We see how gender norms have evolved or regressed. Mm-hmm. We do a lot of the back and forth over time and from place to place. Of course, in the U.S., even from region to region. You know, if we were to get in a car and drive to a very rural place,
right,
we might have a different experience in how people interpret our gender right now than if we were to go to an urban place. So I think that those unique changes regionally and era-wise even help fulfill further the understanding that gender is a social construct. When we challenge it, we are really perceived as destabilizing society, and that's considered subversive. And I'm like, I'm not subversive. I'm just Talcott. Like, just let me have my
or
gender.
Polka dot.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Which all of these issues come through so wonderfully in
Thank
the book.
Thank you.
And so clearly, and speaking to a young audience. And you both wrote it and did the illustrations, which are just beautiful and engaging.
Thank you so much.
Talk a bit about your creative process.
So I had no guidance. You know, I had the idea and the dialogue in my head through so many interactions, both myself throughout my life, you know, you're in the wrong restroom, or, you know, unfortunately, more violently than that, too. But also the experience is of the children I serve and even my own child. You know, both of my children, really, we did not assign gender to, right? We let that emerge as it would and have just been supportive of, you know, all of the ways that the kids choose to express themselves in a realistic way, you know, understanding, too, and helping prepare them for where there's going to be some resistance and pushback. So the dialogue was simple, the dialogue between characters. Translating the concepts that I just spoke to, right, gender as a social construct, biological sex being distinct from that, and as well as creating some parallels between other social constructs. This is very jargony, even now, as I speak to it, right? And so translating that in a way that felt understandable to children, but moreover to perhaps the grown-ups who are reading this book to them, that was greatly challenging. And I'm still not sure that I nailed it 1,000%. I mean, the book does become pretty texty. And there's parts where I think while the book is great for every age, as anyone who's read a book to a child before knows, when the kid starts paging ahead, you cut the dialogue short or you kind of manage it, not censor it, but you manage it to match their attention span. And I've heard that reading this to a preschooler, you know, people have found ways to do that. So again, making something that is dynamic across age groups was
right.
probably my biggest challenge.
I bet.
And the illustrations, those were easy and fun, right? You know, that was the easy part. I did a lot of placing the page order differently. The book that we have here is the second edition. The first edition sold out. It's out of print. And when releasing the second edition, we've included a new foreword by an incredible South Asian performance art duo. They're trans femme called Dark Matter. And I encourage everyone after this program to Google Dark Matter and listen to some of their performances. So this includes a new foreword and then some minor changes to the text to make it more readable. After doing 100 readings, I noticed where I would have liked to change the dialogue in the first edition. And so those minor changes are reflected in the second edition.
Nice, nice. And you dedicated the book to your children.
I did.
Clem and Hank.
Yeah.
Please read that dedication and tell us what it means for all of you.
The dedication says, for Hank and Clem, you generously lent your likenesses to a story that, while not entirely your own, impacts you each tremendously. Thank you for your allyship and your love, Mommy. So these are my children, and the book, the images in the book, Polka Dot is based on Hank, and the image of Gladiola is based on Clem. And so to begin with, it was easier for me to draw pictures of children who I was familiar with. I'd never done a storybook or a cartoon before where there has to be obviously consistency from image to image of the same character. Again, I don't feel like I totally nailed that, but...
I disagree.
Thank you. I was able to say, hey, Henny, come here. I need you to pretend like you're in a box and then draw from that, right? And so that was easy. Again, the piece about the story not being entirely their own, some of these dialogues are exactly my children's dialogues. And some of the experiences are also their experiences. It's definitely a mashup of my own and theirs, with my youngest child, Hank or Hen, being what people would say as gender nonconforming. And so this was informed by them in ways.
Nice.
Yeah. And they love, I mean, they'll sign books occasionally as if they, right? And then this really cute part in the second edition is that there's actually an illustration done by Hen in here. The bunny rabbits and the mushrooms.
Cute.
So now, yeah, Hen will actually sign this page if people want. It's pretty sweet.
That's great.
Yeah.
So were they helping you?
Yeah, definitely collaborative. And they were my first readers, which was also great. Actually, Hank was quite young when this first came out, maybe 3 or 4 years old. But Clementine was already reading and would read it. And we would judge how long this attention span was before Hank would want to page forward and make some changes to the dialogue based on that. So it was nice to have their support and also their input.
Nice. And inspiration.
Yeah, for sure. It's really a collaborative project.
Why don't we have you read from the book?
Okay. Hi, I'm Polka Dot. I was born in the summertime. My whole family was so happy to meet me. My sister Gladiola was the third person to hold me. And above Gladiola, there's a sign that says, "It's a baby." Gladiola is a girl. This is her gender identity. She says she just knows that she is a girl because people know what's true about themselves, silly. My parents agree. They also say that it's not super nice to call someone silly. Many of us have been told that there are only two options when it comes to gender identity, boy or girl. It is said that to be one of these two genders, you must think, look, act, and even feel certain ways. I'm going to page forward to another dialogue that I want the listeners to hear. This two-choice model is called the gender binary. Binary refers to the two parts, girl and boy. Gender refers to the way you are expected to be as a girl or a boy. What gender means and looks like can change over time and from culture to culture. While some cultures make room for lots of gender identities, most do not. Most ask us to choose girl or boy. Check a box. "Wow," says Gladiola. "This is bananas. The gender binary is not my favorite thing at all. It leaves out so much. I'm so sorry that people insist you choose boy or girl, Polka Dot. Who does that?" Polka Dot says, "Who doesn't, Gladiola? It seems like I'm asked to choose everywhere, all the time, from the bathroom to the toy aisle, from toothbrushes to Little League. It's exhausting, and it's not the truth about gender. Toys don't have a gender. They're toys. In a bathroom, I don't need to use a gender. I need to use a toilet. I'm not a boy or a girl. I am real and true, but in my culture, there's not a lot of room for me."
It's beautiful.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for reading it. And We'll be back in just a minute. We'll continue our conversation. There's so much to talk about. But first, let's hear a bit more from Derek Lassiter and music from his new CD, Music Outside.
I see the pain you hide. I see it in your eyes. So strong is your crush anything gentle, and it dies. Ooh. Ooh. When love turned to hurt, it blew your mind. Lost your way and raged inside. It felt too weak to be kind. You couldn't tell the truth, and so you lied. Always try and carry on, looking for what's right or wrong. Fight until the love is gone. You can lay it down, put it down, and lay it down. You don't have to be that strong. I hear you through the noise. I hear it in your voice. A word that breaks and looking for what's right or wrong. You can fight until the love is gone. You can lay it down, put it down. You can lay it down, all the fight inside and all the hurt you feel. You can lay it down because you don't have to be that strong. Always try and carry on, looking for what's right or wrong. Fight until the love is gone. You don't have to be that strong.
Welcome back to Outbeat Collage Out in the Arts. I'm Gary Carnevale. We just heard from Derek Lassiter's new CD, Music Outside. That was Be That Strong. Derek's music is available on cdbaby.com. Tonight's guest is author and activist Talcott Broadhead.
Hello.
Talk a bit about publishing Meet Polka Dot and how you are marketing such an original book.
Well, interestingly, and perhaps not surprisingly, when the book idea came about, you know, I followed the typical route of going to publishers, both mainstream and more kind of subcultural, and floating the idea. There was no interest. Some of the feedback was, I guess you could say, productive, in that I was told, we just don't think we could sell it. And, you know, there's actually even a line in the book where Gladiola says, I didn't even know that I didn't know these things, polka dot. When you're presenting information about something that so many people take for granted as, you know, static and set in stone, like gender, when you're presenting information that challenges those, you know, cultural understandings that have been in place for so long, there's a lot of discomfort. And, you know, from an economic perspective, which is how most publishers function, they probably had a correct concern about the saleability of such a book. So it became clear quickly that it was, I guess, in my own words, perhaps considered too radical, which is quite interesting, in fact, because the book has done so well and it has been embraced by graduate schools enormously, teachers' colleges, graduate education programs and social work programs. And it's really been used as a way to kind of educate educators on how to interact with children and other humans, in fact.
Right.
So I'm happy that we kind of beat that perception. What ended up happening was my life took, you know, a different turn, as these things do. And this project became really central to my family, and also my professional experience. And so we took a risk and started a publishing company. It's called Danger Dot Publishing. And the intention was not only to publish Meet Polka Dot, but also to help other people from underrepresented or misrepresented groups in the literary world achieve what I was hoping to do, which was bringing really critical pieces that are written by us, for us, about us, right? We tell our own stories. I'm not a parent telling the story of a kid who's trans. I am that person and I'm telling my story. And I wanted more voices, of course, as we all, I would hope, do, to be represented in that way. So we went and made, you know, the real deal. And the first publication was the first edition of Meet Polka Dot. The second publication is called 39 Questions for White People by Naima Lowe, a queer Black woman who is a professor of film and media studies at the Evergreen State College. And her work is phenomenal. This publication that Danger Dot produced for her actually ended up being discussed, and the discussion online went viral on Color Lines, and we sold out in 48 hours.
Wow.
So that also helped beam Danger Dot into the spotlight. But more importantly, I think, is that people in our communities, both Naima's and mine and where our communities overlap, saw that this wasn't impossible. And we were able to leverage the skills we do have, like strong social media presences, being leaders in our communities, and kind of grow this Danger Dot Publishing. So the third title, of course, became the second edition of Meet Polka Dot. Now, I have the rest of my life and, you know, being a professor and a social worker happening. And so I'm not all Danger Dot all the time. I would love to. we don't have the capital for that yet. But there was just such a demand for Meet Polka Dot after it was out of print that this kind of new edition of Meet Polka Dot, I had to do it. I was being forced to do it by right. You know, teachers, educators, children, parents. And the time was even more ripe for this book to land So the first edition came out in 2013. Think of how much has changed in those 3 years when it comes to people's understanding of the issues that trans folks face. The bathroom issues, for instance. And I think more people who were not clear or had no understanding of the issues that trans folks face, that's been highlighted for them now, but they want more tools so that they know how to talk about this in ways that are respectful and clear. And they want to know that coming from trans people, genderqueer people themselves. So the book has already been met with great reception. It just hit the stands, so to speak, this summer. It's carried by a number of independent bookstores. And for any store that's interested in carrying it, it wholesales. For people who would like to order one online, if their bookstore doesn't carry it, you have a couple options. You can ask your bookstore to carry it, or you can go to danger.com and order it directly. Something I encourage everyone to do, because not everyone can go out and buy a new book whenever we wish, is to open up your browser. If you are on the internet, find the acquisitions page at your public library system and make a request for Meet Polka Dot in your public library. Your library will often order a number of copies to make sure they're distributed to all of their branches, and then you can check it out whenever you wish.
Nice. Other than the other publishing houses, what other obstacles have you faced with the book?
So one of the interesting obstacles has been my readings. So I've had people wish to have me do a reading of the book, but then they get really uncomfortable about how to manage that space. There's a lot of concern that patrons will feel it's not appropriate content for children. How funny, right? By the age of, you know, often pre-birth, people have already gendered their children, yet they have some fear or concern about them learning about gender. Right. So it's provocative for some people in that way. And I think for that reason, people are often more comfortable either purchasing the book themselves or checking it out from the library, having a look, going through it with their children, and having conversations that are paced accordingly to their own family. A lot of people also conflate being transgender with being LGBA, so lesbian, gay, bisexual, queer. So like biological sex and gender identity being two separate and distinct experiences, sexual identity, or as we might say, sexual orientation, is also distinct from gender identity, right? So one of the ways that I think it's nice to hear it put is your sexual orientation is about who you go to bed with, and your gender identity is about who you go to bed as. And we each have both of those experiences. If you're trans, you can be, you know, straight or queer or gay. You can be asexual, bisexual, so on. And so the way that people function around their values and their family values is quite diverse. And a lot of people have concerns about talking about sexual identity with their children because gender identity gets conflated with that. There's sometimes fear that if they talk about gender identity, it's like talking about sexual identity.
Right.
My personal concerns about that are nil. I don't want people to feel bad for having those concerns. You know, everybody has their own experience around those issues. But I do want people to have a greater understanding and awareness about those distinctions. And just like sexual identity, you can't make your child trans. You can't make them not trans either. And the word we use for people who are not trans is cisgender, C-I-S-G-E-N-D-E-R. It's a good word. Use it. It's a fun word. Transgender is a fun, good word too, right? Try it out. So reading this book is not going to make your kid trans. It's not going to make your kid not trans either, right? So I think it's helpful to know that access to more information helps people make more informed decisions. And that can be true for decisions about gender expression. Your kid's gender identity is like it's already theirs. And when they have access to more ways to understand themselves, the way they express themselves might change over time, but it's an expression of something that was already true for themselves. Mm-hmm. So if anything, this book only gives them a little bit more of an understanding about what might be true for them. And for those kids who identify with polka dot, what a fantastic way to see oneself reflected back to oneself in a positive and true light, right? It doesn't sugarcoat it. As polka dot says, my culture does not make a lot of room for me. So we see the reality of this.
Why do you think parents are so ill-prepared for the coming out of their child? It always seems so surprising. I guess not in my backyard. It couldn't happen to me from a cisgender parent.
I think there's a sense from many parents that they missed something. Why didn't I see this coming? And that's a term or a statement that's frequently made about negative things. So the idea that they might not know their child as well as they thought they did, that can feel uncomfortable and disorienting. There's also an experience by many parents or caregivers of real grave concern for their children. They see the realities of, you know, or they're just seeing them now, perhaps, of trans people. When you add the intersections of race, immigrant status, age, economic status, you start to see that a person's experience with oppression, of course, it becomes even larger. So if your child is trans and they're a trans person of color, the outcomes that you might perceive them having as a parent and that we see happening socially, those are scary. You know, the disenfranchisement is real, but so is the violence. And suicidality is very high. However, when we have positive representations of people in all of their glorious differences in media, and when we have access to information about those differences, it does reduce confusion, it does reduce fear, and those are things that together reduce bullying and harassment. So I encourage every person to write their story for all of the children's books. Polka Dot is a white child. I could not write to an experience other than that because that would be misrepresentative. My experience is that of a white person who's gender queer, trans. And so to have somebody tell their story and just add to this kind of trove of experiences is so critical.
You brought up the restroom controversy.
Yeah.
Why do you think there's this incredible pushback at this time?
Yeah. Well, again, so much of it is related to this concern about destabilizing social truths that we've taken as truths, right? So gender being one of them. You'll notice that the people who seem most upset about these access to restrooms are people that already have the most power. So cisgender people and typically cisgender men. So what they see is a destabilizing of something that they've always taken as a right, but they're now hearing for the first time that it's a privilege. They don't want to believe it's a privilege. They want to feel they earned it. And they've convinced other people who they have power over, namely cisgender women, that it's a safety issue. And it's not. The people who are being assaulted and or killed in restrooms, by and large, are trans people. The next group is women. So that actually makes us natural allies to one another, right? Perhaps if we want restrooms to be more safe, men shouldn't use them. You can edit that out. We should get rid of men.
I love it.
Let's get rid of men. No,
exactly. Back to the outhouse. You want to act like cavemen.
Right. So I think, yeah. But again, there's room there for allyship amongst groups that aren't. Oppressed groups are very often pitted against one another that serves the group with more power. And so we see that playing out here again. The fear is real. If cisgender women are fearful of restroom use because they're afraid that a man's going to come in and hurt them, we need to pay attention to that. The solution is not disallowing trans people from using the bathroom that matches their gender identity. We need to look at another solution. This is a public health issue. So if there's safety issues about restrooms, then how do we change environmental design? How do we change social accountability, right? Because that's a real concern. It's just a bit misplaced when it comes to who the perpetrators are.
Right, right. And how interesting it is that you have a huge retail establishment like Target coming down on the right side of this issue and putting money into it and just refusing to back down.
Yes. Good thing, too, because that's where, you know, in the way that our society functions with corporations, namely having the power, it is where we're going to see these changes really evolve, is with those folks who are willing to stand up and say, this is what's right, and we're standing by it.
Right.
And this is part of our brand, in fact.
Right. Exactly.
And if that's what it takes.
We're proud about this. We're not just backing down. We're making this statement, right. And we're comfortable doing that.
If only people also believed trans people the way they believe Target.
Right. What would you say to those in our community? I think they're fewer and fewer, but they're still out there and they can still be very vocal, who believe that because they are not trans or genderqueer, this is not their fight.
Oh, great question. Our liberation is all bound to one another. And while LGB is not the same as T, we unite those together in the, you know, our alphabet soup, because we do each face gender discrimination. You know, that's where the acronym and the community are cohesive. And whether it's gender discrimination based on you don't love the gender you should, according to social norms, or you aren't the gender you should be, we each do experience that. So when we fight for gender liberation and equity, we all win. Everyone wins, including that person with all of the privilege, right? The cisgender man who has all the other privilege points socially, white, you know, U.S. citizen,
social
wealthy,
economic
et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
Those things, that person is liberated from this disproportionate ascribing of privilege that they didn't ask for. Of course, they benefit from, but let me liberate you from that. You don't need that privilege. So the buy-in for people who do have privilege in terms of allying with a movement that they might believe doesn't affect them, the buy-in is that you do have to give your privilege up for equity to exist. And if you don't know what that looks like when it comes to gender, read this book, right? Because you might feel and understand your own experience with oppression in, let's say, as a lesbian, and feel that you are as oppressed as a transgender person. We don't need to play oppression Olympics, right? Both oppressions exist.
There's no medal.
There's no medal to be won. And if we come together, we'll have more strength when we fight each other's oppression.
Beautifully put. Beautifully put. What's up next for you?
So very excitingly, in a couple of weeks, actually, the next publication to land is a coloring book. And it's called Polka Dots Gender Awesome Coloring Book. It will actually have an ISBN number, so the hope is that it'll find its way into libraries as well. The book is a number of pages. It's a collaborative project between Hank Henney and myself. It's super fun, really cute illustrations. My own are very similar to the illustrations in the book. And each page has something related to gender diversity. So itself tells an additional story to meet Polkadot. And I hope that people will love coloring it. I hope that teachers will grab a copy and, you know, within fair use standards, make some photocopies for their kids. And, you know, it's part of the coloring book presentation that I was hoping will happen is that people will share it, and that it will, in that way, just normalize these conversations and statements about gender.
And of course, you did all the drawings yourself.
Yeah, and so did Henny. Henny did some of them.
Nice, nice. Well, this has been a great conversation, Talkit.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us.
It has been great.
Tell our listeners one more time how they can get the book and the coloring book.
If you are an individual, you can purchase the book at dangerdot.com. The word danger dot is one word, DANGERDOT. If you are a retailer, you can send an email via dangerdot.com for the jobbers and wholesale inquiry. And the coloring book will also be available at that same website. You'll be able to download it as a PDF where you print it yourself, or you can order a hard copy with the glossy covers. And you can check your local independent bookstores as well for copies of both books.
Great. Thanks again for joining us.
Thank you for having me. Yes.
Certainly. Thank you for listening tonight. Remember, Outbeat Radio can be heard every Sunday night here on KRCB at 8 p.m. Greg Moralia will be here next Sunday with Outbeat Radio News in Depth. Outbeat Collage will be back Sunday, October 16th, when we'll learn all about the upcoming Outwatch Wine Country's LGBTQI Film Festival. We hope you have a great week,